Hey everyone, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and today my guest is the Executive Director of Operation Honor Rural Salute, Michelle Lang. She has been a guest on the show a couple of years ago now. I'm not exactly sure when it was that we last had you on, but it was a few years back, and we recently met up for the first time in person at the Military Influencer Conference. That was a couple months ago. And I wanted to have her back on the show to discuss her recent work. And basically, Michelle, alongside her husband, Chris, founded Operation Honor Rural Salute to guide veterans in small towns to the essential resources that are sometimes difficult to access from remote areas. And so we're going to talk about that and the type of stuff that they're focusing on now and the challenges that veterans face in those kind of more remote areas. So before we get into that, Michelle, wanted to welcome you to the show again, and thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. So let's kind of take it back a little bit to kind of what prompted you guys to start the organization, and kind of maybe weave in some of your personal experiences and how all of that kind of played into kind of your desire to put this organization together.
Yeah, so we started what was Veteran Help Point back in 2021. And that was through my husband got out of the military for the first time. So I have like the unique experience of being a veteran spouse and a military spouse. So when I got out of the military the first time in 2019, we moved back to Pennsylvania, and it wasn't near, you know, a large military installation. So he needed some mental health care. That the VA that he went to seek out mental health care actually denied him care, which happens at place to place. You know, everything is varies upon location. And we just got a bad location. And anyway, that started his spiral. I tried to find help for him. Got him in with a therapist that had no military experience, couldn't relate to the veteran experience, nothing, which actually made the situation worse. At the same time, we're trying to find our neighbor, a Vietnam veteran, housing because he was being evicted from his house. And I mean, like, my life was out of control. I thought my marriage was going to end. I thought he might take his life. It was nuts. So anyway, we got back on the right track through a lot of work and therapy and just pure stubbornness and determination. But when he was reserves, he ended up deploying because he signed up for a deployment without telling me because we were super good. So he deployed during COVID, which was super fun in itself. I started talking to other spouses about this and just like sharing my experience because I don't mind talking about it. And people were like, yeah, we had the same experience. And some of them were my friends. And I'm like, why didn't you tell me about this whenever you transitioned out? And they're like, well, we felt dumb. And it's like, well, you shouldn't feel dumb. Obviously, a lot of people are having trouble with the transition. But there's 44,000 nonprofits out there for veterans. Why can't we find them in the time that we need them? And of course, like the larger ones are bogged down. You're going through calls and blah, blah, blah. So we decided he started doing the reserves full time, so active duty. Now we're down here, North Carolina, Fort Bragg, Liberty. And that's whenever we decided to start Veteran Help Point by just accumulating these smaller nonprofits that are doing good work and putting them in a database that people can easily get to and see no matter where they are. That has changed since 2021. Now we focus more on rural areas, well, only on rural areas and rural veterans and their families. So same idea, but we've just laser focused on this one category of veterans.
I like how you guys kind of pivoted and shifted your focus to those veterans who are not in the major cities. They're out in those rural areas, and like you were saying, in your own experience with your husband and some of your friends and people that you knew, you know, these things are not the easiest to find when there's not a whole heck of a lot around you to begin with, never mind, you know, mental health care or even, you know, physical health or other things like that. But to your point, there's thousands of nonprofits out there. So even if the VA facilities that are nearest to you are, you know, 100 plus miles away, well, there's still other organizations that are out there. But a lot of times I found just through the work that I do, it probably feels like drinking from a fire hose if you're to go and find all the resources that are available to you. And so it's a lot of information all at once, and you only may need like one or two different organizations that you might need to talk to. But how do you find them? And where is that information? And so this collection of organizations, this database that you have, is got to be a lifesaver to some of these people, right?
Yeah, sometimes people don't even realize that there's help. Like, they just don't even think there's help for me. Mm-hmm. Like, why would somebody help me whenever they already feel sort of abandoned by the military, or, you know, have this chip on their shoulder, what we call maybe moral injury. So like, why would somebody help me? So that even prevents them from looking for that. And then where do you find them? I mean, Google isn't just like bringing up wonderful suggestions for you.
Well, and you may, people who are listening may say, well, just Google it and figure it out, right? And that should be easy enough, right? But Google's going to give you information, but it may not be good information. They may give you, you know, information about a resource that's out there in your area, but not all of these organizations are created equally. Some of them are really great, and some of them are terrible. And so you may find that terrible one, and then to your point, that moral injury, or the, you know, nobody cares enough to help me, that kind of mindset is just going to get reinforced through that interaction with a terrible organization, with people who maybe are just in it for the money, or, you know, whatever it is that they're in it for. Maybe they're not in it for the right reasons, and you end up with that wrong organization, and now you're like, you know what, well, the heck with it, I'm just not going to look for anything anymore, you know? But there are plenty of great organizations out there, right?
Oh, yeah, there's a ton.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, I know some of the obvious answers to this are probably, you know, just access to the care and resources, but are there any kind of unique challenges that rural veterans face when they get back into the civilian life, and, you know, anything that might be substantially different from people who are maybe closer to more urban areas?
There's two things. Well, really the biggest thing is just not knowing what's available. But you hear this with both urban veterans and rural veterans, is that they just don't know where to look. Like, even though an urban veteran can go to their American Legion and get the resources, or they can go to a local veteran meetup, that's not happening in rural America. So while the primary marketing source in rural America is word of mouth, still, that is the best way to advertise. There's not the sense of, especially among younger veterans, like, I'm a veteran and I'm going to tell other veterans about what helped me. That's not happening. So there's just a total disconnect between talking to people about their experiences and like the physical isolation that is rural America.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the issues that a lot of veterans, especially those with PTSD and some other issues, they tend to isolate themselves anyways. Even if they are living in the middle of, you know, a very populated city, they just isolate themselves. They stay in their home, and they don't get out much. They don't interact with other people very, very often, just as a consequence of, you know, what they're going through. But I gotta imagine that's amplified even more when it's real easy. You can even step outside your house and there's nobody for miles. And that can make it even more isolating for folks like that. And not knowing that there are even people available to talk to. And I don't even mean professionally, just, you know, groups of, you know, veterans who might get together and just hang out and talk, you know, I don't want to say, you know, American Legion or VFW style. I mean, although those, there's nothing wrong with that type of thing, but, you know, just there might be groups of people who, I don't know, if you like running, you know, there might be a veteran running group that's kind of in your area. You might have to drive a little to get there or whatever, but, you know, there might be things like that where you can find these people. But if you don't even know that something like this exists, like, what do you even search for? You know, it's like that unknown kind of thing, right?
Yeah. You don't know what you don't know.
Right. Exactly. So Operation Honor Rural Salute, again, is the name of the organization. What is the approach to getting your service and what you guys do in front of those folks who are living in rural America and in those kind of more remote areas? Because I know you said word of mouth is huge with those people. With anybody, really, but especially in those rural areas. What is your approach for getting in front of those people?
That would be mostly our in-person events. So we started out small with one event this year. Keep forgetting that it happened this year. And our goal is to do these in-person events in one state, in each state once a year. So all 50 states once a year. That was really, really helpful in getting the word out. But then we're also building a community online. So we have our resource page, which we've pared down significantly, and we changed the way we do resources. And then we have our online community page for rural veterans, which I'm pretty sure is probably the first rural veteran community. And then we have our in-person events, which are sort of like the actualization of what we do online. So we bring these resources together. A lot of them are local resources. We try to get national resources in there too. So people can see the familiar faces that they're going to go need to talk to, but also recognize that there's people nationally that actually do care about them, because that is also very true. And then, you know, go celebrate with food trucks, music, speakers, kids games, craft vendors, like an educational piece. Like it's just, and it's a festival. It's a fun day.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And I follow what you guys do on social media, and I've seen some of the pictures and the videos and all those kind of things of stuff that you guys have done. And it seems like, you know, the whole community is coming together, and there's lots of people who are involved, and they want to share those resources, like you were just talking about, share those resources with people who may not know that those resources even exist. And I think that, like, for me anyways, if I was in that position, and, you know, I do what I do, so I know there are a lot of resources out there, but if I was in that position where I didn't know any of those resources, and I hear about this event, and I'm like, okay, well, I'll go check it out, and I start seeing all of these people who have a resource to offer, or have some, you know, their nonprofit, or, you know, something that they have available, it would make me feel like, well, holy crap, people actually care. And there are things out there that I have access to that are potentially going to benefit me, you know, dealing with whatever this thing is that I might be dealing with. That's got to feel good. To finally realize that those things are available, right?
Yeah, that was a big realization. And one of the motivations to help us rebrand in June is just like so many people at this event that were like very deeply impacted by it. Mm-hmm. And whenever you're throwing this event, that event was a two-day festival. And whenever you're throwing things like this, like, yes, it's a lot of work. And you get caught up in it, and you get lost in the sauce a little bit. Like, you just want it to get where it's going and get to the end of the day. You have a difficult time pausing and really understanding the impact that was made. And so it wasn't, you know, I caught a couple stories from people that day, but it wasn't until the day after or the weeks after where people were coming up to me and telling me, you know, what somebody said to them about the event or how they were impacted by it, like how spouses were impacted by it. It was just really, it was really incredible to be able to, I don't know, make people feel supported.
Yeah. And I think this is kind of an issue, I think, with the, I don't know if it's a veteran issue or maybe just folks in the first responder and veteran communities, they just have maybe similar mindsets, but where it's like, you know what, I'll just suck it up and I'll deal with it on my own. Or there's somebody else who's worse off than me. And, I don't need to go take that spot from somebody else or that whatever that resource is. I don't need to take that from somebody else. I'll just suffer and I'll deal with it. And it's not that big a deal. And there's kind of that mindset that a lot of times we get, and I'm guilty of that too. And you kind of have to like just kick your own butt and say like, no, you can't think that way because these resources are there for veterans. You're a veteran. Like, it belongs there for you. Yes, there might be somebody else out there who is struggling too, but it doesn't mean that you're not just because there's somebody else. Right. And we mm-hmm. get that. I don't know. I hate that mindset, even though I've had it myself. I hate that mindset, you know?
I know. It's a tough one, but then think about how amplified that is within the rural community because right. they are, I mean, historically even more stubborn because they are, whenever you're, especially if you're working with the land, whenever you work with the land, like you're at the mercy of the weather, you're at the mm-hmm. mercy of the elements, and it doesn't matter. My parents always just say to me, my mom, doesn't matter, Michelle, it doesn't matter if you're sick or not, the cows still need milk. Like, which I didn't even live on a farm. My parents moved off the dairy farm when I was born, but it didn't matter. The animals still need fed. They still need water. The cows still need milk. The fields still need plowed. You don't have time to take care of yourself. And I lived that my whole life. And it is, they are the most stubborn people I've ever met, but the most giving and loving. And it doesn't matter if they don't like you or not. Mm-hmm. If you're their neighbor and you broke your leg or you had cancer, something like that, they're coming over and they're going to bring you a casserole dish. They're going to make sure you're fed. They're going to make sure things are taken care of for you. And sure. I see that over and over again in rural communities, but it's not until people have those catastrophic things happen to them where they need to stop and take care of themselves. So how can we figure out how to make it more accessible to get this help and take care of yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, kind of the events that you guys are doing now that you're starting to do and getting out, you know, around the country and sharing these resources with people is going to be a great way to get this in front of people because to your point that you were talking about earlier, the rural community relies on that word of mouth, in-person communication, that type of thing. It's very, very much a... you know, just the way things are done, I suppose. And so when you have those in-person events, they can actually meet these people and say, okay, well, all right, these people are legit. I like how they work and whatever. So so those things I think are going to be great opportunities for those rural veterans to connect with the resources that do go to these things. You mentioned a couple stories from the last event that you had that you heard about, you know, from whether it was from a spouse or from, you know, other people that you got to kind of reflect on. Any that come to mind that you'd like to share?
I think the first thing that really made me pause was, whenever you are in this, you know, in this space, in this veteran space, military space, you get so used to knowing what is out there, so it almost doesn't seem too novel, right? Mm-hmm. And that day, I had three Vietnam veterans tell either myself or one of my volunteers that this was the first time that they felt seen and supported since they came home. And that, like, I had one guy that, such a sweet family, he had to walk away from me because he was in tears. And he didn't want to see me. He didn't want to see him cry. But, boy, it just being on veterans have a really special place in my heart because it's people almost my generation, I think, and younger especially, don't know what they went through when they came home by their own, you know, by their own neighbors. And so that was really that struck me. That really hurt my heart, but I'm so happy that we could do that for them. And then we had a panel. It's called a Freedom First Speaker Panel. We had a couple people up there just talking about what freedom meant to them. We had my friend Steve Nisbet, Marty Scoglin, and Jenna Carlton came in and did a panel for us. And they were very candid. I knew they would be. And the people there in that room, it was really interesting to see civilians connect with their stories and understand a little bit more what that military experience is like for not only them, but for spouses, because I know Marty and Steve talked about what it's like for their spouses when they were gone, which was really interesting. And then I had a lady that was there who she posted on Facebook one day, you know, that was really the first time that I heard her spouse speak about his experiences. And he spoke in front of everybody because that was the first time that he had an opportunity to be in a room full of veterans, people that got him. And he could share his experiences, what it was like coming home from, and he was another Vietnam veteran. It's just like, man, what happens whenever you just have a space that you can share things with is so, so healing. And then able to go right across the street and see more resources that are available for you. And it doesn't have to be anything serious. It doesn't have to be mental health. There's, you know, holistic resources there. There's farming resources there. There's financial resources. There's educational. So there's all these things that veterans have that they really should be using. I mean, it's just, there's so much potential for rural veterans. It's insane.
There is. There's a lot of stuff. And I was kind of, you know, just doing a little bit of poking around just to see some of the stuff out there. And you're right. There's so many resources available to rural folks. Not including the national resource that's kind of available to everybody, but there's some, like, you know, very local things that are available to people, and it's pretty awesome to find those types of things. And to your point with the Vietnam veterans, to actually have them feel like they are being seen for the first time is way long overdue. You know, I mean, as a country, that's a shameful thing that it's taken this long for us to actually let those people know that their service and their sacrifices are actually valued by the people who they were fighting for and supporting and all that. Like that to me, I hate when I hear things like that. Mm-hmm. Not that you've done anything wrong by saying that or bringing that up. It's just, it just irks me when it's like, man, the people back then just did so wrong by these people, and it's finally taken all these years for us to finally be like, hey, you know, we support you, we appreciate your service, and, you know, we want to, you know, provide you with resources and benefits and all that type of stuff. They didn't get that when they got home.
No, and they got a very, you know, bad rap because of, you know, their own dealing with PTSD, and, you know, that's where the stereotype comes from. And it's like, oh, it's just so unimaginable. Like, listening to them talk is just so unimaginable. War today, not that I've ever been to war, but it's just, I mean, wow, so gruesome. And then they just came back home and everybody hated them. And it, mm-hmm. I mean, I just cannot imagine the shame that they had to care and, like, to fight for the feeling to be proud of their service is something that we do not have to really experience today.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of them didn't even have, or basically they were told, hey, put on this uniform and you're going to war. They were drafted, and it's not like they may not have even wanted to go to war, but it's kind of like too bad. You're going anyways. And then to come home and get treated that way, it's like it's just not right. But I'm glad to see, you know, that these veterans are going to these things. They're actually identifying as a veteran, right? Because for years, I'm sure they probably tried to hide that just because of how they were treated. But actually getting out there and finding these resources, and I imagine, you know, seeing those folks just kind of warms your heart too, to see all that, you know, how they come out and actually find the benefits and the services that they are looking for, right? Mm-hmm. Now I imagine dealing with the variables that go into this, the veterans themselves, the families, the community resources, it's got to be challenging to kind of bring all that stuff together. You know, what's available for who, and you know, in what locations. What are some of the challenges that you faced in putting all this information together?
So that's why we changed our database completely. So that was a challenge, and we were tackling it. We bought a really robust mapping system to be able to handle that, and it was really super cool. But then we rebranded to Operation Honor Roll Salute, and what I found was that people need that word of mouth. They need that, you know, little bit of trust to be able to take the leap. So they weren't clicking our resources. They weren't even using QR codes. They weren't, you know, so what can we do? So if you go into our website now, which we still have a few more resources we need to put on, we way pared it down. So we still have the same categories of help. But what we've done now is have these, because I'm very particular about the resources that go on there. They can serve rural veterans no matter where they're at. So these are virtual resources, most likely, if they don't have like flagship locations across the country. I go to these resources and I say, hey, can you make me a video, 60 to 90 second video, just like this? It doesn't have to be fancy, of you saying who you are, how you serve rural veterans, and where they go to get served by you. Because then that's going to start building that little thread of trust. Before they even click off the page to your link, they already know that there's some real person there that's going to help them, and that they're going to actually get the help that they need. And I think that's a much better approach for this demographic. I think it's a good approach for a lot. But, you know, if you get in the weeds a little bit, too many videos, it bogs your site down anyway. So
sure,
that's why we're only focusing on the resources that can serve people anywhere in the United States. So mostly virtual resources. But yeah, we've really changed our approach there.
Well, and it's good that you're able to improve the offering that you have by kind of recognizing, okay, it was too much. Maybe like I was talking about before, like drinking from a fire hose, it was just so many resources. And I know you had a lot on your site before, and then you like you said, pared it down. But having the right resources makes what you're offering so much more impactful. And like you said, you're not just having any old resource on there. You've kind of vetted them. You've talked to the people. Like you said, you have the video that you put on there. So you know that the resource that you're presenting to people is legit. It's valid. It's not going to be someone who's going to screw people over. They're in it to help people, right? Yeah. And so I think for the rural veterans, or anybody really, but for especially the rural veterans who have felt like they've just been passed over or ignored and nobody cares, that type of thing, there are people There are people who care, and this is where you find them. And I think that's a beautiful thing about it, is you bring it all together in one nice, neat package, and it makes it super easy for people to find the resources that they need. Like you said, a lot of times virtual resources, but people who are there for you and can help you with whatever it is you're going through. And that's great that you have all of that. For the listeners out there who might be rural veterans themselves or know one, maybe their family member or friend or neighbor, someone in their community might be a veteran, how can they reach out to the organization to find the help that they're looking for, or even offer their support? Maybe they have a resource that's specific to a local area and they want to provide that through your resource page. How does that work?
So they can go to our website, ohruralsalute.org, and there we have the resources and videos listed. Kind of the overflow to that is our community page, which, of course, we're talking about that word of mouth. That's where you can share what resources work for you, or if you see somebody that's like, hey, I need help. We also have a contact form where you can just easily fill that out and contact us. Let us know if you need help with something, or, if you have a resource that you'd like to see on the page. And then there's also a side where you submit to join the community and you can get approved then. And then once you're approved, you're in the community. Inside the community, there's different groups. So there's the general group, and then there's homesteading, VA loan, and real estate, millennial, rural veterans, financial wellness, and there's going to be a fitness group, a benefits group, and we're working on like a peer-to-peer mental health group too.
So it seems pretty comprehensive. I mean, you've got a wide range of services and support available. And I noticed even, by age kind of range, the millennial group as well, that, I think they may be the ones who are, perhaps more on the tech savvy side. And so they might be, reaching out through these types of resources, maybe a little more comfortably than someone who might be a little bit older than them. And that might be kind of a, interesting thing to see how all that plays out or as the years go on to see, who are the actual users of all these types of resources. Maybe that to me, I think would be kind of interesting data point just to see like who's getting the value out of these services and things like that. So aside from the services that you guys list through the website and that database, do you have any advice for veterans and their families who are living in these rural areas? Things that they may not realize are available to them, but things that they can do to get some sort of support?
I mean, use the help that's available, because and don't be too proud to do so, right? Mm. Because improving yourself is never something you should be ashamed of. Right. We all need to improve, and life doesn't stop lifing, so there's always things that you have to work through. But there are so many advantages of being a veteran or a veteran family. There's so many, and there's so many benefits. I talked to so many VSOs about this. People are not using their benefits. And what happens when people don't use your benefits? The government takes that money away, Right. So go see what's available to you. Use it. It's not a handout. It's things that you earned. So go take what you earned, improve your family, improve your mental health. I know that whenever people are physically well, mentally well, they're grounded, their social life is good, their work life is good, they are fantastic mentors, they're fantastic leaders. And so what could that look like whenever we have a bunch of rural veterans, rural spouses who are leading the way in improving their communities because they reached out and used these resources. They leaned into their communities, talked about things, and now they're able to mentor the next generation. They're able to help other veterans. They're able to, you know, become pillars of the community. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And that's a very real thing that I think can happen on a large scale if people just start leaning in a little bit.
Yeah. And to that point, what you're talking about using these benefits, and if you don't use these benefits, they might get taken away. The government would be like, well, nobody wants this, so we're going to start taking it away. And so that would, not only is that hurting you because it's a benefit that you've earned, and I'm talking to the listeners here, right? You've earned certain benefits. And if you're not utilizing them, that's hurting you, but it could hurt other veterans down the line who no longer get access to it. And I think there was an article that came out a little while ago. I think you know what I'm referring to, but basically saying that, you know, veterans are getting, you know, absurd amount of benefits and all that kind of stuff. But the veterans aren't using the benefits to the extent that they have available to them. If mm-hmm. the author of this article only knew how many people are just not taking advantage of these benefits. And I don't mean taking advantage in a bad way, like you're scamming the system or anything, but using the benefits, maybe that's a better way to put it. The amount of people who are just not using the benefits because they don't want to, like we were saying before, that I don't want to take from somebody else who might need it more than me. They may be, more severely injured than I was, and so they need those benefits, and I'll just suffer and I'll deal with it. There's so many people who are out there like that, not taking advantage of these benefits, and it's actually sad because now there's starting to be people who are like, well, we're giving too many benefits out, and think about the long-term impacts that this is going to end up having on not just the people who have already served, but people who are thinking about it. Maybe a high school, kid who's, 16, 17, 18 years old, who's thinking about joining the military, and they start hearing about people saying, well, we're going to take benefits away from veterans. Well, okay, well, what happens if something happens to me while I'm serving? If I'm this 18-year-old kid who's thinking about going and joining, okay, well, what happens if something happens to me? Now there's no support for me? Like, well, then maybe I don't want to join. And, now you're out of luck because mm-hmm. now you have a whole population of people who might have otherwise joined, but you're taking those things away and showing that their service is not as valued as maybe we once thought it was. And that to me is a terrible thing, right?
Yeah, that was an insane article. I mean, just considering, of course, there's always going to be people that take advantage.
Sure.
That's the nature of the beast. That's life. That's how it goes. But I mean, just look at what Hunter 7 does. And, they are themselves paying out of, that's what their nonprofit is set up for, to pay for veterans' cancer treatments because veterans have one of the highest rates of rare cancers. Because you're over in these burn pits and all this crap. My husband just joked with me the other day, I forget what I need him to do. Oh, I need him to blow on the kid's food. And people have dark sense of humor. He's like, you're going to ask me, a burn pit veteran, to go use my lungs and blow on these kids' food? I'm like, shut, that is so wrong. But I mean, seriously, like who knows what will happen down the line? And
right.
I don't know if we're going to have to fight for him to get, treatment or things like that. People shouldn't have to fight for cancer treatments. And that's what these stupid journalists are not seeing is like, I mean, you went overseas and now you seriously can't get your treatment paid for by the government.
Right.
That's insane.
Yeah. And it's kind of like a bait and switch kind of thing where it's like, oh yeah, look, we have all these benefits and join the military, go fight in these wars and go do all this stuff. And don't worry about it. If something happens, we'll take care of you. And then all of a sudden, but will we really, right? And it's like, that would make me feel pretty awful. Even as, this is, I don't know if this is going to be a controversial stance to take on this, but I don't really care. This is kind of my point of view on it is, so say someone goes overseas, they're deployed, they get killed in action. They come home, you know, they have the funeral, the family's presented with the flag on behalf of a grateful nation. And in my mind, after seeing an article like that, it's like, what is a nation grateful for? Grateful that they don't have to now take care of this person? Is that what they're grateful for? Mm. And that's the kind of thing that irks me so much. And so seeing people like that who write those articles, I just gets my blood boiling.
I know. it's wild. But I mean, it is interesting. They are considering cutting benefits. But I mean, look, they took away the nice retirement system, too, that they had. So now everybody has what they went to traditional 401ks, didn't they? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Luckily, my husband got grandfathered in. So thank goodness.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's just another thing. But active duty is a different beast where it's just like everything's constantly changing 10 years at a time, kind of, and it's right. always 10 years behind. But I mean, on the veteran side, there are so many things for you to take advantage of. And also active duty usually can take advantage of this stuff too. But like,
yeah.
you can go and get, you know, your Security Plus certificate, your project management, your whatever IT certificate you want, you got it for free. Just take it. So there's like all these things you can gather up while you're on active duty or while you're ETSing, whatever, to be a bigger earner on the outside, if that's the mm-hmm. route you want to go, even if it's not something you're super happy doing, it buys you some time
yeah.
to figure out what you really want to do. And I think like people, transition is a whole nother topic, but
sure.
that's something that people get really bogged down in because it is very overwhelming and you get hit out of left field with all these feelings that you did not expect.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so you mentioned the website earlier for people to go to. OHRuralSalute.org is the website, and I'll have that in the show notes. And I'll also put your social media and things like that if you want to connect and find out, you know, kind of where you guys are going as far as, you know, the different events that you have throughout the year and all that kind of stuff. So they can, if it's something in their area, they can get in touch and they can go to these events and all that type of stuff too. I think that'll be a great thing. Any other places or resources that we should direct people to before wrapping this episode up? Or
I mean,
we
just
pretty much covered it.
Yeah, the website's our main. That's where everything lives now.
Excellent.
Social media, quick updates, and then we're adding a lot more events to the plate in 2025. So we have our Pennsylvania event. We're adding one in North Carolina. And then I think another one in Pennsylvania, a smaller one in Gettysburg.
Okay.
So there's a lot going on.
A lot going on. Yeah. It seems like you have your hands full, but I'm looking forward to seeing all the, you know, events that are happening in the future. You know, looking forward to seeing all those people who are getting the benefits and the support that they are, you know, that they deserve, that is long overdue for some of them. But Michelle, I'm grateful for you to have taken the time to come on the show and sharing what Operation Honor Rural Salute has been doing for the rural veterans. And you know, honestly, this work is being done. It provides resources, assistance to these folks who, you know, maybe didn't even realize that these things exist. I think it's amazing. And, you know, so hats off to you and your team of volunteers who are out there, you know, putting all the work in to get this out there. You know, again, for the listeners, the links will be in the show notes so you can check it out there. But again, Michelle, thank you so much for taking the time to come on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.